Welcome to Scars to Stars, where conversations and personal stories let us know we are not alone. In this show, you will meet authors and speakers from our books and events as they share vulnerable personal stories to spread hope and inspire you through adversities in your own life. The world is a difficult place. You will find like-minded people here with kind hearts and supportive souls. I am your host, Dina Brown Mitchell. I am a suicide survivor and the founder of the Realize Foundation. I am so glad you are here. Let's dig into this meaningful conversation. Hi friends, it's Dina with the Realize Foundation, and I'm here today with Bill Gardner. And Bill wrote in our second book, and he has a great story for you to read if you want to get one of our books on Amazon. But I also want to catch up with Bill today because he's been having a lot of cool stuff going on in his life. And I want to first talk about the movie or documentary you've been involved in and the cause, because it's a really awesome cause. And I would love for you to tell us about it.
Sure. And thanks for having me here today. This is really cool. It's been a minute. So the name of the film is Walking While Black, Love is the Answer. And it was spawned from an incident that happened in June of 2012, where the writer, director, producer of the film, AJ Ali, was stopped in his neighborhood, which is a predominantly white neighborhood, and he's a black man, and couldn't get the officer to articulate why he was being stopped. And after questioning him several times, he finally got the officer to say, well, we're stopping anyone who looks like they're not from this neighborhood. And that right there is racial profiling. So long story short, he ended up leaving that scene, got confronted by other officers who backed away when he told them that he had his lawyer on the phone, that this was racial profiling. And for the next year and a half, he and his wife are harassed, pulled over, stopped, followed everywhere around town. So that was the impetus for him creating a media piece, which turned into the 90-minute film, Walking While Black, Love is the Answer. And the organization, just to give you an idea of what it's all about, LOVE, L-O-V-E, is an acronym for Learn About the People in the Community You Serve, Open Your Hearts to Their Needs, Volunteer to Help Them Achieve Those Needs, and then Empower Other People to Do the Same. So in a nutshell, what that means is we create events that the public and the local law enforcement agency can come to, especially the black and brown communities, because those are usually the ones with the most stress and strife between them and the police department. But we set up events like, you know, going to meet for coffee, building a garden together, a community garden, painting a mural, we call a love mural, playing sports together. And it could be anything, like let your imagination run wild. I mean, maybe there's a group out there that want to play Dungeons and Dragons, who knows? But the idea is that if we do these events over and over and over again and invite people just to get together and talk and drink and eat and whatever else, and hopefully at the end of these conversations, the police start to realize that, well, this person really is a human being and I should treat them with a little more respect. And hopefully the community person will say, well, you know, this officer really isn't the big ogre that I thought they were. Maybe I'll give them a little, you know, bit of a break the next time they roll into my neighborhood. So it's designed to do that at the same time. And the film was created as a catalyst to get these conversations started. It's basically made up of black law enforcement on and off the job, or I should say active or retired. I'm using lingo here. Some people might not understand that. Some clergy, social workers, a few other civilians, but the majority of them black, talking about their experiences with law enforcement on and off the job, in public and, you know, when in the department. And some of the stories are really horrendous. And so at the beginning of the film is a little difficult to watch because if, you know, you're a person of color, it just conjures up all the different things that have happened to you, you've heard about, have happened to your family through generations, that, you know, those stories were just passed down and ultimately leading to distrust of law enforcement, and which by the way, if you really want to go back and look at this issue, it goes back 405 years, back to the, you know, first time that slaves were brought, or I should say Africans were brought onto this country and were used as slaves. There were slave patrols that were created to protect the property of rich white landowners and business owners. And they are also used to go out and catch runaway slaves. And that was the impetus for law enforcement in this country. And unfortunately, because those Africans were vilified when they got here, you know, all kinds of stories about, you know, they're evil, they'll rape your white daughter, they'll do this, that, and the other thing, and they're just not good people. And that has just lasted for 400 plus years. So, you know, it's something that's been inbred in that culture. Oh, and by the way, I feel very comfortable saying this because I was a police officer for 10 years here in the city of Worcester. And I experienced just that. 10 years, I was bullied. I was blackballed. I was passed over. I was name called. All kinds, just every day, something going, just being in a hostile work environment. And it started in the police academy. Mm-hmm. Having, you know, getting into small arguments with classmates who said, you know, we can do this, when, no, you can't do that. You have to follow this law, that law, and the other law. Ah, you don't know what you're talking about. And then, of course, when the tests came back, I was always in the right. So by the time I got out in the street, I was labeled. And there were officers who already didn't want to work with me or treated me like crap because I wouldn't bend the law or I wouldn't step on people's civil rights. Yeah, so when you get to the beginning of the film and you watch these stories, it then transitions into, you know, opening your heart and, you know, admitting that there's a problem, admitting that there's an issue. And then it transitions into apologizing for the behavior. And then from there, reconciling with the apology, and then hopefully going on together as a team, as a family, as a community. Then the movie very, very well goes through those four different steps. And it's absolutely brilliant. There's also an accompanying book called titled Love is the Answer. And it was initially, just like the film, predominantly Black folks, some other white folks in and out of law enforcement to tell their stories. And then there's a whole section on things you can do tomorrow. Things you could do today, for that matter. And the 25 things that you can do, like going and sitting down and having coffee with a police officer, or arranging to have an athletic event with a group of police officers, all kinds of things like that that you could literally do tomorrow are outlined in the book. And then it from there goes into really in-depth into the love principles. And yeah, it's just an amazing book. And it's almost 400 pages. I literally read it in 2.5 days, and I used to read a lot and had fallen out over the years and usually can't sit long enough to read a book. Certainly not, you know, 400 pages in 2.5 days. And this book was so on point. Every other line I was reading was like, I said that, I thought that, I could have written that or would have written that. The book resonated with me like you wouldn't believe. And what I realized at the end of the book, after reading it, I saw immediately that the blueprint of love could be picked up off of law enforcement and Black and brown communities and put on anything. So, for example, I'm working with the city of Gardner, different spelling, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, in Gardner, Massachusetts, and I'm a member of their domestic violence task force. And the idea I thought about immediately when I was introduced to these folks and invited to become a member of their task force, because I was a domestic violence investigator when I was with the Worcester Police Department, was that victims or survivors of domestic violence are often very much misunderstood. You know, when I was on the job, there were officers who would always say, why are we coming back here again? If we have to come back again, both of you are getting arrested. You know, which is one of the last things you want to say to a victim, because they'll never want to try to find help with law enforcement ever again. And all kinds of other things like that. They don't want to write a full report. They don't want to write an information filled report. You know, it's just like, we came, we saw, we left, and that's it. And that just won't help a victim or a survivor of domestic violence when they have to go to court. So there are all kinds of things that revolve around the victims, survivors of domestic violence not being listened to. And I thought immediately this would be a great opportunity for us to get survivors of domestic violence in a room with dispatchers, police officers, paramedics, and firefighters who are always the first people on the scene to deal with a domestic incident, depending on the, I don't want to say lethality, depending on the level of that particular incident. And, you know, the people can get very jaded in those departments, and you hear it all the time, and it's, you know, a little under the breath comments. And so these survivors are definitely misunderstood. So it would be an amazing opportunity to get survivors in the room with these first responders and be able to talk about, you know, what is it like when you come to a domestic violence call? And, you know, the other side can ask, well, what is it like when I arrive at your home or residence or whatever as a police officer? So again, it's made to have multiple activities that people can come to over and over again. And hopefully in the end, people will understand that, you know, there is something bigger than what I saw initially, and maybe we could take a better look at it. So that's pretty much the organization in a nutshell. Yeah. What questions might you have about what I've said so far?
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that, Bill, because I got to see the movie and it is amazing. And I hope everyone will watch it because it is eye-opening for people who have never experienced what you're talking about. Mm. And it's also just a really good, it's put together very well. I'm so excited you're involved in that because it's such a good cause. And I think, you know, you and I and James and you and Keith have all talked about, and those of you listening, James and Keith have also written books, written in our books. And Bill is the one who brought Keith to our Scars to Stars book. So thank you. But I think all of us have talked about a little bit about this, about, you know, when we did our last podcast or one of the podcasts you and James and I did about the circle. Like, if you want to explain that, the circle after there's a call and how you all process it and talk through it as a team, you know, when you are called to something traumatic. Do you want to just touch on that briefly about what that is?
Sure.
Better than me.
Well, yeah, sure. So in the case of domestic violence calls, and I was one of four officers and a sergeant who actually created the Worcester Police Department's first domestic violence unit back in 96, 97. And what we would do, we have four quadrants in the city. So each one of us had a quadrant. And then on the half of the city, there are two quadrants. So we'd have two officers ride together and we'd cover both quadrants together. What would happen is, let's say we show up on duty at 8 o'clock in the morning. So doing 8 to 4, we would run reports from 4 p.m. or actually from 8 a.m. until 7:59 a.m. the next day, capturing all of the domestic reports that are coded that way, and then be able to print them up and take a look at them. And we'd split them up amongst ourselves, depending on the quadrants in the city. And then we would go out in pairs and literally reach out to these survivors of domestic abuse and be able to, you know, advise them of their rights, 209A laws, what the case, not case law, is the chapter and verse in the Mass General Laws that covers domestic violence. You know, tell them what their rights are, how they can obtain a restraining order. You know, the first restraining order is usually a temporary, which can then be turned into a permanent, which will last up to a year. You know, they can have a domestic violence advocate from the district attorney's office accompany them the minute they walk into the courthouse to the minute they leave, and all kinds of other things. We actually created all kinds of little kind of devices to do the work. So if we had a victim who was in a very traumatic, very dangerous situation in the city of Worcester, we would reach out to the areas in Springfield or North Worcester County and say, do you guys have a bed? Do you folks have a bed that this person can stay at until they go to court? And then we would drive them out there. And then the other side would actually drive them back so that we could get this person out of the community and they don't have to worry about facing their abuser. all kinds of things like that were created by the domestic violence unit. And it was, I tell you, it was just the most amazing unit. We had a really good supervisor who was very laid back and just let us do our work, let him know if we, you know, when and if we needed help or support from him. And it was just a well-oiled machine. And we helped a lot of survivors of domestic violence. And I'm very proud of that work, probably more so than any other work I did in the department. Yeah, unfortunately, that supervisor left and was replaced by a supervisor who didn't like me. And I literally lasted another 2 months and he got me kicked out of the unit because I was allegedly insubordinate and all these other things when I was just doing the things that Mark, the original sergeant, had let us do on a regular basis anyway. So heaven forbid I question him. So that ended of that career, but it was the most amazing 6 to 9 months. And I'm just really proud of that work.
Yeah, I'm thankful that there are people like you in the world who can help with those things, because you're right. The victims of domestic violence specifically have unique challenges that, you know, maybe other crimes don't see because they're living in that atmosphere. It's not just this one time occurrence usually. So thank you for what you have done in that arena as well.
Sure.
Are you feeling alone, lacking hope, and unsure of the future? So many people are feeling the same way. How could you not, after an unprecedented lockdown of the entire globe? The fallout has changed the normalcy we all knew. It's hard when you feel lost, and even harder when you're scared to talk about it. We are here to help. At the Realize Foundation, we provide peer-to-peer support through conversations, community, and personal stories. It is our mission to spread hope and let you know that you are not alone. If you are enjoying this podcast, I would love for you to become part of our membership community to get the peer-to-peer support you need. Learn more at the call to action link for Scars to Stars membership. I look forward to seeing you in our community of kind souls. So, Bill, I want to talk about some positive stuff that's been happening in your life. And I'm just excited for you about, I think it was called an art installation that you got a scholarship or you have to explain it because I don't know all the right terms, but I know you did something that was really cool and I want you to talk about it.
Sure. Well, unfortunately, the arts installation never came to fruition. So from there, and let me start by saying I'm a photographer and a photographer my entire life. And when I opened up my first studio, it was really all about high-end senior and family portraits. So instead of just photographing a senior in front of a sky blue background with a 6 foot tall crayon that says 2024, we would literally go to the senior and, you know, go to their home or go to their favorite spot or go to their family farm or whatever, and be able to incorporate their uniforms, their instruments, their art supplies, their projects they worked on with their parents, whatever it is that makes them them, and incorporate that into the photography. So it was a really high-end photography. And that was around 2002 that I started that officially. And by 2012, 2013, business wasn't really doing great. Around here, you have to be a name. Otherwise, people don't really want to spend the money on you if you're, you know, relatively unknown. And I'm not a business person. I'm a true artist. I don't like chasing money. And that's the last thing I want to do. So between the two, the business just never really took off. So in 2012, I was at a meeting, actually, and I had my camera with me. And I saw on the floor, kind of like the sun is coming across me right now. It was coming through the windows of this old church, and the windows and this church, I need to go look and find out exactly when it was, but I'm willing to bet that this church has been around since the early 1900s. So the glass that was made back then isn't like glass today. And over time, it starts to literally melt. And so there are ripples in the windows, and you could see that on the floor, the ripples in the light just showing. And I saw it and I'm like, that's a really cool photograph. And I took a picture of it and decided on that day that, you know what, I'm going to do this for a year. I called the project Picture a Day, and I would go out and photograph. I had my camera with me 24 hours a day. Wherever I went, I had my camera. So, you know, going out to meet somebody for lunch, going to a job, having coffee, anything, I had my cameras with me. Or would just go someplace and just park the car, walk, and just keep shooting until I, you know, figured I had what I needed. And I would post those on Facebook every day and did it for a full year. It was April 19, 2012 to April 18 of 2013. And like a third of the way through the process, an artist friend reached out to me and she said, have you ever heard of Mixang? And I'm like, Mixang? No, what is that? And so she said, look it up. And I looked it up. And Mixang is a Tibetan word for contemplative eye. And what that means as far as photography is concerned is that you don't go and look for the whole of an object, but you look for a detail within that whole, within the whole of that object, and then photograph that and do it in a different way. Like do it, you know, low in the ground or from high up. We all see from this vantage point. So do it from a different vantage point. Do it from the side, you know, which ordinarily people wouldn't necessarily look at. And so it creates an object, a piece of art that you can't readily identify. So for the photographer, it's kind of a calming thing where you now have to just take your time looking and looking and oh, there it is. Okay, let's modify it. And it takes a lot more time than the, you know, snapshot shooter who just looks, oh, look at that, click, and then walks away. Conversely, when you have these images displayed, it now causes the viewer to also slow down because they can't immediately identify what it is. And so now they take a little more time standing and looking at an image. Something about it is familiar, but we're not quite. And they all of a sudden realize what it is. And that's just really exciting. And now for the rest of the displays, they're going through because they want to see what the next one is and see if they can try to figure it out. And it just makes the experience so much better for the photographer and the viewer. And so I shoot like that a lot now. And last year, I started a project where I would walk around the town. In fact, it happened to be Webster, Massachusetts, about 20 minutes south of here, where there's a bookstore, cafe bookstore, that I hang out in quite frequently. And the owner has local artists display their work 12 times a year, actually 11 times a year. A single artist gets to display their work. And then in February, it's happening right now, it's like a group show. So after going to this place for 5, 6, 7 years, I finally said to Deb, the owner of Book Lovers Gourmet, that, you know what, I think I'm ready to have my own show. And she said, certainly. And we picked a month and I started last spring into the summer walking around the town of Webster with my camera everywhere I could think of where I could find some unique photography. And I would photograph these little pieces of holes. And long story short, I ended up with about 12 prints to hang up on the wall. And what we did was we created a competition out of it to see if folks from the area could figure out where all these photos were taken. And it was just amazing, the positive reception to that and the people that were, you know, grabbed the list and often would take pictures of each picture and then go out and then try to find them. And then they got to write down on a slip where they thought these were. And we gave away a print to whoever had the most right guesses. And this one couple actually found pretty much all 12 of them. And there was and won their own their print. It was just really exciting. So just down the road from there, and actually was one of the subjects of my photo shoot, was the Webster Public Library. And I knew that they had a rec room there and would do shows there. So I immediately went down there now that I had images that I could show and say, hey, you know, I'd be interested in doing a show here. Can we make that happen? And, you know, after a few phone calls and emails, I have a show that is going to open up March 26th, going through April 29th, starting next month. And I'll have few more images included with the original set, and they will be on display in the library. And we'll again do the same kind of scavenger hunt that we did before. I'm just really looking forward to it because people really resonated with the work. And it was something that, you know, was from their town, their home, and they could, you know, readily identify with things. So it just got to be really exciting.
That is so cool. I knew I saw a post and some stuff about what you were doing, but I didn't understand the whole picture until you just said that.
Mm.
And I think it's Miksang. Can you spell that for me?
Yes, it's Miksang. Miksang. And if folks will look it up, there's actually a Miksang organization foundation around photography. It's actually in Colorado. So they're probably the United States most, they're the most prevalent organization in the country for Miksang. And they do courses and classes on it. And if you just go through their website, which will pop up as soon as you do a Google search on Miksang, people can take a look at those images and see exactly what it is I'm talking about. And it's just amazing the things that you don't ordinarily think of that are around you all the time, that you look at one of these images and be like, wow, I never would have thought of that. That's such a cool little detail.
That is cool. I've never heard that word, but, you know, I went to school for architecture. And so when you're reading books about architecture, there's similar things where they're giving you photos of detailed parts of buildings and stuff that, in my mind, it's similar to what you're talking about. But I've seen some of your pictures and they're amazing. And so if you're watching this video, you guys need to go follow Bill and see his photography. And he's also an incredible writer. He writes really neat, cool stories. So yeah, when you were, and what you also might not know about him is he's a Harley fan. And so he rides his motorcycle and he'll come back with all his pictures and then he'll write a story about his trip he just went on. And it's just fascinating. So hopefully other people are reading those posts and stories that you put out in the world because you're so good at that.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, you know, jumping on the bike, maybe with a plan, maybe not, and just heading out from here west because the western part of the state is so much less populated than the eastern side. And you just riding a motorcycle in heavy traffic all the time with crazy drivers is not fun. So I always head out west and then either end up in Connecticut, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire. Two years ago, I actually did all six New England states plus New York in one day and hit every single one. Yeah. And, you know, stopping every once in a while, taking a couple of photographs, making some notes, either hard copy or, you know, kept in my head. And when I get back, I just sit down and I kind of start to begin a story of how the day started and what the weather was like and the mood in the air was and the animals I saw along the way and the people that stopped and actually said hi when that doesn't usually happen in the city. You know, all kinds of things that happen when you're out in a motorcycle and just, you know, you're that much closer to the world, you know, as motorcyclists like to say, not in a cage, which is a car. You know, you're more open to the world and you're more open to the public. And it just makes for a really, really fun travels. And of course, the motorcycle community is absolutely brilliant. You know, for example, any motorcyclist that's riding down the road and sees a motorcycle off to the side of the road will always slow down and stop and say, hey, is everything okay? And then you either get one of these or one of those. And if it's one of these, it's okay, cool, and take off. And if it's not, then, you know, they always stop and see what they can do to help out. So it's a really, really beautiful community. And just the adventures you're going to have on a bike are just absolutely amazing because people will, if you pull up in a car, the average person won't stop and talk. But if you pull up on a motorcycle, you know, and sit, you know, go into Dunkin' Donuts and get a coffee and come out and sit on the bike and people will stop, you know, repeatedly and just start having conversations. And all of a sudden you just start to meet real people who you ordinarily might not get to talk to. So it's a really, really great adventure all the way around.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, thank you for having this conversation with me today. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you want to share?
No, not that I can think of. except maybe if you do a Google search on Walking While Black, Love is the Answer, you can find access to the URL that explains the movie and gives you several options to view the film. If you go to trylovenow.com, that is our website for Love is the Answer, and they can actually look into getting the book and finding out what are all the things that Love is the Answer is doing throughout the United States, and maybe have this brought to their community. Although I'm based in Worcester, I reach out to people all across the country and work on getting this implemented in their communities. So anyone that sees this can actually check it out and see about having it brought to their community, especially if there are situations where their communities don't have the greatest relationship with their police departments. And that's a place to start. And after that, it's just up to our own imagination, the different things that we can support and bring to light.
Yeah, that's true. I thank you for the link information, and I'll make sure that's with this podcast wherever it goes. I also want to just tell everybody that we are starting our next Scars to Stars book in July of 2024. And if you're interested in telling your story, you can go to our website, which is realizefoundation.org, and you can submit your information there, and then I will reach out to you and we'll have a conversation about it. But it's a really great way for us to get these stories out. Maybe Bill might even want to write another chapter about this documentary project he's been working on. But it's been really a great resource, not only for the people who are involved in it, but the people who get to read it and the people who buy it and share it with other people who might need to know they're not alone. And I think it's just been a really awesome project. And on March 30th of 2024 is our fourth anniversary. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
And so we're really excited. We're planning something. So look for something from us soon about what that's going to look like. But we need to celebrate.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. No, it's amazing because it started just after COVID hit. And so now that we're coming up on that 4-year anniversary, it's the same with the book, which is absolutely brilliant. People should pick up one of the many different issues that we have right now and take a look and be able to read the stories of people who have had some kind of traumatic event, but they've rallied and come around the other side and are actually living much better lives when, you know, they potentially, you know, broke down, turned to drugs and alcohol, you know, thought about committing suicide, things like that, and they didn't. So they're really, really inspirational stories, and everyone should check them out.
Thanks, Bill. I agree. I think, and I want to thank you because you've been involved since our very first event, and Bill showed up at our first virtual summit. I think it was March of 2021, and he showed up, just jumped in and started helping me with tech stuff. So I really appreciate all your support and your involvement since the beginning, Bill.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Well, thanks again for having this conversation. And if you're watching, we hope to see you on the next edition. We put podcasts out every Wednesday. I'm so happy you joined us for this conversation. My wish is that you found comfort and hope in your own unique situation. If you resonated with our message, please head over to therealizefoundation.org, where you can apply to write your own story in one of our books. You can also download our 60 Ideas for Self-Care on the resources page. I can't wait to hear from you. Until next time, you are not alone, you are worthy, and you are enough.